But because of the technology, we also gained new jobs, right? Yeah. So the redundant jobs are going to go away. There's no two ways about it. They are going to go away. So we help people realize that, yes, although you're going to lose some jobs, new jobs are also going to be created. And those, that's where we kind of need to focus, right? So demystifying the tech as in saying, hey, don't be scared about it. Now, the things that you're scared about, let's talk about it, right? Because we're not also just like, hey, sweep under the rug. Let's talk about the technology. And then let's help you use the technology in a way that benefits you and that future-proofs you.
This is Assorted Immigrant Stories podcast. My name is Zenith Mwangahamambamalao, and I am your host. And for those of you that are stopping by for the very first time, this is a podcast about immigrant journeys, the things I and others wish we knew. We have interviews and share conversations with immigrants from diverse backgrounds and countries as they share their own immigration stories. We explore struggles, triumphs, and cultural adjustments. We discuss identity, belonging, and community. And we also highlight successes and contributions to both American society and back home, and that's wherever home might be. We also review some books that touch on the immigrant story. So don't forget to rate and review, like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. Assorted Immigrant Stories podcast. Today, I am super, super excited to have Ben Collins Asongwe joining me on the show. Ben is a true Renaissance man. I think I've been saying this quite a bit, but well, he is. He's a math whiz, an economics expert, and a seasoned actuarist. And I hope I'm saying that right because I've been having issues with that. He is.
It's an unusual field, you know, the field of actuarial science. Yes.
And I think you're the second person on the podcast.
Oh, wow. Really?
Actually, okay. You know what? I lied. The last person, he was a data analyst, but I think he was explaining to me the difference between the two. Because yes. I know three other people, including my niece, who pursued that career.
And yes,
a lot so good in math. Yes. So, yeah.
A lot of people who study actuarial science, you know, study math, and usually the pathway leads into data science. So that, you know, I can see the, I can see the cross.
So you see the connection, right?
Yes.
Like, oh, okay. This is good. Anyway, he is a passionate advocate for diversity and inclusion. He is the CEO and founder of BC Advantage LLC, which we'll get into at some point in the show. He is working to harness the power of AI for social good. So we will tap into that. So what hasn't he done, from tutoring students in math and economics to leading teams and developing innovative solutions? He has done it all, and his leading skills date back to when he was 15 in high school back in Cameroon. So sit back, relax, and get ready to have some fun with Ben and I. We're going to dive into his story, explore his passions, and learn more about what drives him. Welcome to the show. Say hello to our listeners.
Hi, everybody. It is an absolute pleasure to be on your show, Zenith. You know, we were talking about how we've interacted before, but we've interacted just on a call, on a one-on-one call. I'm humbled to be on your show. You know, I think the work that you're doing here and the reason why you're doing this is amazing. You know, bringing together immigrants from all over the place to share and tell their stories and just tap into and dig into that cultural diversity, I think is quite amazing. So let me introduce myself. My first name is Ben Collins. It does take a while for people to kind of get that, but I have two first names. Right. When I introduce myself, people I know will call me Ben or they'll call me Collins, but there's a reason to that, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe let me start with my origin story, right? This is us going from birth.
Okay.
So unfortunately, I had a difficult birth, right? I don't know this. This is just testaments from my creators, right? My mom and my dad. But it was a difficult birth. I almost did not make it, and so the doctor who saved my life was called Dr. Ben, right? So my uncle here in Chicago in the United States had wanted me to be named Collins, right? I had no choice. I was fine with that. But, due to that challenging and difficult scenario, and the doctor, just in kind of recognition, my name was given as Ben Collins. So there was a time in my life where I didn't care about that. A couple of years ago, I went through this period of just kind of self-reflection and finding my purpose, and things like that. And part of that journey was me discovering the reason why my name was Ben Collins. Okay. So, just to kick us off on a high note.
Yes, no, that's amazing. It's interesting that you say that, because the couple of things I was going to ask you, but you've explained to us, was about your names. I was going to say, because most people are Ben Luyando Asongwe, for example. Luyando is a Zambian name, so I just threw that in there.
I'm Zambian now, I accept.
And I was like, okay, Ben Collins. So I was going to ask, tell us how that came to be. So that is an amazing story and we thank God that you're here today to help us.
Because everything
you're doing is for the community. And the next question I was going to ask you is, when I was looking through your LinkedIn profile, the second thing listed under you being the CEO and founder of the BC Advantage was the fact that you spent some time at the end of 2023, you went on a self-discovering journey. And I wanted to ask why that was so, I think that's very important, but you
that is it that
even
is.
On your LinkedIn profile. And I think that's profound. And I wanted to know how you got to that.
Yes. So every day above ground is a blessing, right? Mm-hmm. Starting with that origin story there. And thank you. I've never heard somebody else tell my story and give those highlights like you did, starting from school, and things like that. So I very much appreciate that. So in 2023, right, I go by themes, right? Since before that, let me say, for example, in 2020, my theme was health, right? Okay. It's just, every year I set a theme that's just kind of a guiding light or guiding force for me to just keep in mind, right, as I kind of go through the year. So 2020 was health. Interestingly, COVID also happened that year, and then just kind of following that, I've had other themes like, financial wellness, family and friends. It just so happened that in 2023, my theme for that year was self-discovery. It's a thing that not a lot of people spend time thinking about, and just reflecting in, right? Thinking about, here you are, right, in your journey. What is that path? What is that journey? What are the lessons learned, and things like that? So I sat with myself, just giving myself this theme of the year of self-discovery. I had the opportunity later on in the year, I had taken a sabbatical, from work. And that just kind of was a catalyst, right, for me to sit with myself. It's through that self-discovery that, again, I'm finding out some of these reasons, right? Like, why is my name Ben Collins? Why did I, in boarding school, for example, go down the path of being a dormitory captain, right? To I was 14 at the time. Why am I going down this path? To want to, lead, to want to represent, right, to champion equity, and things like that. So sitting with myself, reflecting on my journey, made me realize two things, right, about myself. I love people, right? I love to help people, And the second thing is I love technology, right? I've always been that person who looked at technology and used technologies, not just for the sake of it, but like, how does it work? You know, what are those underlying layers, you know, and things like that? optimizing various processes. That's the way my brain works, right? I do something once or twice, and then my brain already goes, there must be a better way to kind of improve this, to do this process, whether it's helping people, right? Or whether it's, you know, the work that I did at the companies that I worked at. So I started this company, BC Advantage LLC, right? I started this company to bridge the gap, right, between people and technology, to align purpose with AI innovation, right, to for equity, to level the playing field. I've seen what, you know, some of these billion-dollar companies, right, are doing with the technology that they have mm-hmm. and the impact that they're having. And so I started this company to bridge that gap, to go to your everyday person and just say, hey, look, you know, there's technology out here that can do amazing things. A, do you know about it? Right. B, are you taking advantage of it? Right. Because at the same time, we are shaping, right, the future, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to think 10 years from now, 20 years from now, the decisions and the actions that we're taking right now are shaping that future. And so it does not seem fair to me that only maybe the 1% or the 5% get to decide, right? Because they're the people using the tools, right? How can we take this tool and help the average person? And it starts with why, right? Mm-hmm. You have to connect to people on that human-to-human level, and you kind of go, what are you trying to achieve, right? What are your goals? What are your objectives? And right. then you align AI strategies around that. So the business does three things in general. We consult. Consulting is just, it's like a puzzle. I look at it as a puzzle, right? Mm-hmm. What is the bigger picture? And how are we, you know, kind of making, moving pieces? How are we, you know, achieving various objectives? The second thing we do is coaching. So I coach people, right? Which again, goes to your why. What are you trying to do? Right. Help people see the bigger picture, you know, and just, again, having that kind of assistant, having that kind of mentor along the way. Right. As you're kind of growing, sharing lessons learned, sharing experiences. We are all, one of my strong beliefs in life is we're all connected through our shared experiences. So just kind of bridging that gap. And then the final thing that we do is we build AI products. Mm-hmm. So I have an AI tool. Out in the market. It's called BCAI, and it's supposed to be a digital twin of myself. So I know that was a lot, but
No. That's interesting because it's like you pretty much covered sort of like your core mission. What inspired you? You know, like you say, you took your sabbatical, you asked yourself some questions. You had an AGM right. with yourself, like we all should be doing.
We should Zenith. It's,
you know, really think about what am I doing and why am I doing it? What am I here to do? So that's very profound. Right. And like you help both businesses and individuals, right, to upskill with AI technology.
So with for example, I want to give a little context, right, as to you know, the why, right? And I have a book here which I recommend people read if they haven't. It's called Start with Why by Simon Sinek. What I wanted to add is that journey of self-discovery is something that not a lot of people do. It's very critical. It's a very uncomfortable sort of exercise, right? For people to sit with themselves and really just reflect and say, you know, you may be 60 years old. You know, one of my first clients, for the business was my mother. And she is, you know, in her 60s, she retired, you know, in 2023, after working at this company for 38 years, right? And you know, she's at that point where you've worked at one job, you've done the same thing for 38 years, but what is the purpose, right? Like what is that thing that drives you, right? That motivates you. You realize that it lays in your experiences, right? And sometimes those things are apparent to you, and sometimes those things are dormant. So that's where we come in, is to help people, right? Whether it's in a coaching capacity or whether it's in a business capacity as well, right? With leaders and things like that, we help them align purpose with AI innovation.
Amazing. And you know what? You have a wonderful relationship with your mother, because your mother works alongside you now.
Yes.
I've adopted her. I say she's my mother too.
She's everyone's mom, by the way. She's everyone's mom. She's everyone's I kid mom. You not. No, I kid you not. She's everyone's mom.
You know, I watched an amazing interview that you did with her, and you know, you were explaining about BC Advantage, and then she explained how she's working with you and how she wants to improve the lives of people in Cameroon. And I thought, oh my God, amazing. Would love to have her as well.
Yes.
So, and we'll get back to that, because we'll get back to your origin story, which involves her, because she is your hero. I remember you did say that. It made me react, because I have my son and he's 5 years old. And when I watched that interview with you and your mom, I was like, oh my God, I can look forward. I really, really can look forward. Right. Yes, you know, still like mourn and my parents, but have their spirit push me forward. But yeah, so that was amazing to see. So getting back to the
business. Is that something you've shared before, by the way? I don't know if you have.
No,
About that experience and how it impacted you. Hey, this is a two-way conversation. Let's make it interesting. I'm sorry for, again, what you just shared. I appreciate you being open. I'm grateful to hear that the conversation I had with my mother in one way or the other inspired you, right? As you mentioned your son. Mm. So yes, please, by all means, if you don't mind sharing some of your experience.
No, because I just feel like I've always looked backwards, right? So even as I'm living my life, because both my parents are gone, and even as you get to milestones, it's always, oh, if my mom was here, if my dad was here, I wish my mom was here, I wish my dad was here. And I remember one time having a conversation with my brother. I was like, you know what, I think I need some grief therapy, you know, because I'm like, you know, I had a friend
very who said, important, very important.
Mm-hmm. I had a friend who said, Zenith, you talk about your mom as though she died yesterday. So like I'm very aware of that. And one day my brother said, you know, maybe try to focus on the people who are here. And that really struck a nerve. I was like, oh, you know,
right.
Because in my mind, I'm thinking I am focusing on that. But me focusing on the people that have gone means I'm less than 100% here, right? Because even as I'm achieving, even as I'm achieving and I'm moving through these milestones and life is going on, beautiful things are happening, I am thinking, oh my God, if mom was here, instead of, oh my God, my brother is here to celebrate with me. Oh, look, my son is here. He was going to remember this moment. So I think seeing you and your mom and the way you shared that conversation, that interview, and you were going back and forth and she shared her history and you shared yours and how you came to create your company and how now she's working with you and how she's supporting you. I was like, oh my God, that could be me and my son.
I don't know how many years
from it's... now, you know, like I need to be focusing here and now and look forward to the positive things that can be. So that's what that moment did for me. Yes. Like I had goosebumps watching you guys. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. That's, you know, it sounds like you and, you know, your mother had quite a special bond, quite a special relationship, you know, and your parents, may they both rest in peace. And kind of that continuity that you're talking about, right, is looking forward and looking at what could be, right, especially with your son. And I pray and I hope that, you know, you and your son and your family can build these, you know, build these kinds of bonds. If you're asking me for any secrets, it's that purpose, right? It's so we circle back to, you know, kind of that. It's that purpose, that sitting down with yourself, looking at some of these experiences, right? Those honest and candid conversations, like you said, you had with your brother, right? Mm-hmm. Those candid conversations open your perspective, right? Open your, you know, your mind to kind of see things differently. So that's what we do here at BC, right. BC Advantage, you know, LLC. And it's because this is who we've been, right? With or without the company, this is why I said you align purpose, you know, with, you know, other things like AI and vision, things like that. But this is my purpose. This is what I do naturally. Right. You know, and I've done this throughout kind of my career. So yeah, thank you for opening up and sharing that experience, by the way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So what are the biggest misconceptions that people have about AI upskilling, and how does your company BC Advantage address them?
Okay. So one of the bigger, you know, misconceptions is, well, people hear AI, they think about robots, you know, they think that it's robots. So one of the things that we do at the company is to demystify the technology, right? So we start with people who are curious about AI, people who are interested, maybe people who are already even using the technology and asking them, right, and figuring out, how are you using it? It's about strategy alignment, right? Making sure that, again, you're not just using the tool for the sake of the tool, but that you're actually tapping into and doing what it is that you want to do. So in terms of AI and how we are helping people with that, we have people in the health industry, we have people in finance, you know, every field that is out there. It starts with the interest. The second part of that is the alignment of the why, right? And then the third part is, you know, even interacting with AI, the way it's gotten to this point, you can be talking to a system the same way we're talking like this, right? And all it's about is your curiosity, right? There's sort of that, I think it's a human element in the loop, which is people don't know what to ask, right? Their test, for example, their evaluations, right, with certain AI tools that are performed to test their ability. A tool like ChatGPT, for example, right, which BCAI, the AI, my AI I was talking about earlier, is based on that on that architecture. A tool like that, when tested, right, from a PhD level standpoint, you see that it's excelling at certain evaluations and things like that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's exciting and that's scary, because on one hand, people are afraid that they're going to lose their jobs, right? People are like, oh my God, this technology is, you know, if it's able to have PhD level knowledge, then, you know, when am I at work? But the point is usually missed, right? That's where the demystification comes in, where we tell people and we help people realize that the technology is not new, in the sense that, you remember back in the days, maybe if we're going to wind back the hands of time, 20 years or something like that, do you remember that to call somebody, you had to crank a phone, right? You had to crank, and then that phone called an operator, right? And then the operator linked you up with, you know, wherever it is that you wanted to go. That's not what we have today. Right. That's not what we have today. Those people lost their jobs, though. You see, that's the point. Those people lost their jobs. But because of the technology, we also gained new jobs. Yeah. Right. So the redundant jobs are going to go away. There's no two ways about it. they are going to go away. So we help people realize that, yes, although you're going to lose some jobs, new jobs are also going to be created. And those, that's where we kind of need to focus, right? So demystifying the tech as in saying, hey, don't be scared about it. Now, the things that you're scared about, let's talk about it, right? Because we're not also just like, hey, sweep under the rug. But let's talk about the things you're afraid about. Let's talk about the technology. And then let's help you use the technology in a way that benefits you and that future proofs you, right? One of the reasons why I also, you know, because I have people who are in the medical field. I have people who are in cybersecurity, you know, I have people in the financial industry and things like that. There's no one solution fits all, right? So it really starts with your industry. I will give you all an example of maybe one thing that you should do if you're using one of the AI tools, right? Just say, hey, I'm in, for example, in banking, right? Or I'm in whatever industry you're in, and you want to know, right, how AI is affecting that industry, right? The AI is going to tell you, right? Number two, the follow-up question is, what can I do to stay ahead of the curve?
Right.
It's going to tell you. You know, so whether it's a program, whether it's a course that you need to take, whether it's a certification, it will tell you, right? And then you go and do those things, because the other disconnect most of the times with people, and I'll tell you also as well, one of the most asked questions I get is people ask me, how do you use AI to make money? And I say, have you ever asked the tool that? Right?
Right.
So again, some of those real rhetorical things, but where the disconnect is you ask the AI question like that, for example, how can I use AI to make money? It tells you all the steps, and then people don't do it because they usually hope to go from here to money. But that's not how it works. Right. That's not how it works. You have to do the steps. It's going to recommend certain things that you're going to have to do, but those steps and those things will get you to the goal. It's doing those things that is the hardest part of the equation. And again, where we come in, right? That strategy, that application, you know, you can think about it in another way, right? One of our other duties or functions and things like that, project is project managing. And project managing is really just about helping people go from one point to the other, right? And it's a careful, you know, it's a strategic, you know, type of thing. And it's like having a teacher, right? It's not like, you know, the knowledge is not out there. It's out there. But sometimes you need a teacher to help you build up those strategic, right? In a sort of orderly manner, in a, you know, strategic way. That's where the human side comes in.
Wow. That's really interesting. I like the analogy about the money, right? Because goes to show you that what we need to be doing is leveraging it, right? Because sometimes people think they just want the answers, right? You want, oh, I want money. And you think, oh, it's going to drop money in front of you. No, but
money.
Get to where you want to go and then follow those steps so we can leverage it to get those steps. That way life is easier. You're not checking 10 million different places to figure out how to get to that point. You already have how to get to that point. So that's interesting.
Correct.
And funny you talk about the phones, because we had two at home. So we had in the living room, yeah, the one with the circle. And then, you know, in my dad's room, we had like the ones with the buttons. So those were just, they were new. They were beginning to come in, right? But the one with the circles, had to put like a lock on it. That way you can't go around. Right. And there was a shortcut to it. You know, when you hang up the phone, you use those buttons to press the numbers, and that's how you made the call.
So you were a hacker back in the days. But again, look, that's how the tools were designed, right? And you went beyond that. It's the same thing, right? The tech that has been there. Sometimes the other analogy I think about is like your brain, right? Mm-hmm. There's a saying or there's something out there that says humans use only 10% of their brain or something.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. The phone you have, anybody, right, who's listening to this, the phone you have, if only you knew what it could do, you will be very surprised.
Right. I I know. Exactly. I know. It's true. Exactly. When you discover stuff and you're like, what? People can do that on the phone? And you're like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. Yeah. Like,
I remember things. I remember this is 2000 and, you know, I don't know when the Samsung Galaxy S, maybe it was S4, 5 or 6 or something like that. But many years ago, right? Many, many years ago. Let me tell you, one of the features that it had was you could be looking at your phone. Like, let me say you're reading an article or something like that. You could be looking at your phone. It's tracking your iris, right? And all you had to do is just tilt your head slightly down and it would scroll up for you.
Oh, wow.
This is a thing that phones used to do.
Wow. Oh, wow.
I kid you not. Yep. Yeah. No, look, again, it sounds foreign now, but yes, that's things that phones back then used to do. But people will have the phones and not turn on those features.
Yes, because so many features. You have to go turn this, turn that, and then you're like, okay, this is there. Wow. Okay, so interesting stuff. So now we're going to go back to the beginning. You are from Cameroon. As a matter of fact, I always recommend a book every month on the podcast, and it's always related to a coming to America story, immigrants. Yeah. And the one for this month was, she's from Cameroon, the writer. Her name is Zimbolo Mbue. I don't know if you know her, but there's a book she wrote.
I do not, unfortunately, but I will look her up.
She's a brilliant writer. And the book,
you said her name is
Mbolo Mbue. So it's Imbolo. And her last name is, you know what? Let me show you here. Let me see if I can do it. Okay. Yep.
And I'm just, yeah. So her last name is Mbue. Yeah, I just looked her up. So, okay. Imbolo. Uh-huh. And then last name Mbue. Okay.
Right. So this was the book for last month, Behold the Dreamers. It's a book about a couple from Cameroon. They come to the United States of America. They're in New York, but the husband, Jende, the asylum doesn't go through, and the wife works as a maid, but she's in pharmacy school. She's encouraged to go to nursing school. It's like everything you can think of that could go wrong as an immigrant went wrong in this book. So these are the books I recommend every month on my podcast because that's what we talk about, right? So yeah,
right.
She's good. She's a very good writer.
That is such a gem, you know. And again, speaking to what you're doing here, Zenith, which is connecting these immigrants, right? The assortedness, right? The variety of them and things like that. What you're doing here and providing a platform for people to, you know, share their stories, you know, the hope is somebody out there, some young child, right? I dare to even say a younger version of yourself is just listening to this, soaking up all this knowledge, right? Using your experiences to say, you know, thank you for going through the things that you've gone through. I'm learning from this, right? I'm learning from your experiences. And it's not a matter of your path or your journey being perfect. It's just the fact that, you know, you're growing through this thing as a human being and you are learning lessons and you're just, you know, you're grateful. You're being yourself.
And that's the whole point. You know, that's the whole point. The whole point is so that people can learn from these lived experiences. Because, like, you know, there's no point for 20, 30 years later, people are still coming and then you hear, oh, you know, someone, you know, is so stressed out. They even had to go to the hospital because of one thing or another. Right. And when you hear the reasons, you're like, well, that could have been avoided. Maybe if this person knew this, that could have been avoided. And I started to think maybe there should be more of us to share these stories. And I've gone on to discover other podcasts that are doing similar, you know, work. When I was looking for a name, I was like, oh, I'll try and look for a name and that's taken. I was like, oh my God. I wasn't the only one thinking about this. But it was what was more interesting is finding that this information are in books. So the book that reignited my passion to even start this podcast is by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, and it's titled Americana. Oh,
yes. I know that. I know the author. I haven't read that book, but I do know that the author.
Yes. So Americana was the first book that I read. And I was like, oh, wow, because it's the same thing. It's, you know, going in an African braiding shop. People are talking about getting papers and, you know, being an international student and everything that comes with that. And I was like, oh my God, this, and it's easier to even discuss those situations that are in a book than it would be in real life, because not everybody can put their stuff out there, you know, especially in this climate. So, yeah,
interesting. Indeed, but there's the authenticity in your story, right? That will always uniquely remain yours.
That's true.
I think that this kind of ties into, you know, what you're talking about, you know, picking a title, you know, something like that. Even the work that we're doing here, the truth is, it's not new, as in, you know, it's not as if nobody has ever done this. But what is going to make this continue, and what this is, what makes this special, is your why. You see that at the end of the day, and whatever you do, it always comes down to that.
Right.
Whatever topic you pick, it's almost like grocery stores, right? We have Walmart, we have Sam's, you know, we have Tom Tom's. They all kind of provide the same thing.
It's like
if you need groceries, you can pick between a variety of options. But the reason why you go to a particular one, right, that's where you start finding that why. You start, because the why is the connection between yourself and your audience, right? Your people, like you reading that book, right, Bangozi, and just kind of going, oh wow, this is the connection. So at the end of the day, that authenticity comes from you, and that's the thing that the system is never going to replace. So even when I talk about AI, I say that the authenticity, the thing that makes you uniquely you, is the thing that the system can never replicate.
This is true. This is true. So tell us, you were born in Cameroon. And yes, for those that may not know, where is Cameroon on the map?
So Cameroon is on the west coast of Africa. You know, and it's this, Cameroon has been dubbed Africa in miniature. Just because, you know, we have deserts, we have, you know, forest land, you know, the people themselves in Cameroon are just a variety, a mix, an interesting bunch. We've had the same president for the last 40 something years.
Yes. All my life,
basically. And, you know, the lives of some of the people who came before me. You know, it's a bilingual country as well. Mm-hmm. So French and English. It's 80% French and about 20% English.
Really?
I was born. Yes. I was born on the French side of Cameroon, but I went to school on the English side of Cameroon, which is closer to Nigeria. You know, and so that's why je parle français, je parle anglais.
I know.
Yes, I speak both languages. You know, I've had family and friends just, you know, from everywhere. I think the experiences in Cameroon obviously are defining. I didn't choose to be born there, but I'm glad I was born in Cameroon.
Is that the right way to say it? C'est bien?
Huh? C'est bien. Yeah, c'est bien. Good job. let me add that, you know, as we were talking about earlier, I have never been to any other African country. And sometimes that's a source of, you know, a little bit of a disappointment. But you know what? There were so many things going on in my life, and I just never had that opportunity.
Right.
So I didn't go to other African countries, not because I wanted to, but it's, you know, or that I didn't want to, but because the opportunities never came up. But I do have an opportunity coming up, you know, where I'm going to be, you know, visiting a few countries in Africa, at least for now, you know, and I'm one of the places is going to be Zambia. And I know you said, so you have to tell me all the good places and all the great places to visit in Zambia while I'm out there.
This is really exciting. So, because I also saw, are you going to Rwanda too? Because I saw.
I am.
That's the same program, right?
Yes, I'm going to Rwanda. So the fourth industrial revolution, because with AI, it's been dubbed as the fourth industrial revolution, the rate at which it's changing things, right? So the World Economic Forum released a blueprint for intelligent economies, which just talks about AI adoption, not just from a business perspective, but also from a government perspective.
Right.
You know, and so they're working in collaboration with, I think, the IT Center, ITC or ITU Center center in Kigali to host the very first kind of a global summit on artificial intelligence. So I have an opportunity to attend that, and I look forward to sharing to the knowledge that I'm going to gain and share as well, and just what we can do in terms of AI on the continent. So I'm really looking forward to it.
I am so excited for you for this. I'm really excited. And even for the continent.
Thank you.
I'm so excited and I'm happy that this is happening. And obviously I'm happy that you're going to Zambia.
Yes.
I am happy that you're going to Zambia. And it's funny because I was just joking with someone. I have someone who's going to be in a show a couple episodes from now. And she started this travel agency. Oh my God.
Okay.
What's the name? She started this travel agency because she's the first Zambian I've seen do that. I've seen many others do it. And she'll be doing is making trips to Africa. So it's not just Zambia.
Okay.
And it's funny because I was joking with her this morning and I say to her, please make a trip for me to Nyungwe House. Nyungwe House is somewhere in Rwanda. It sits on a tea plantation in the mountains. And it's somewhere I wanted to go a few birthdays ago, but COVID happened. So I never did. But like you, I would love to visit other African
countries. And you called it what?
It's called Nyungwe House.
Okay.
And it's
in, you know what? I would I'd like to check it out.
Yeah, it is beautiful. It's like in the middle of some tea plantation, mountains, and I really wanted to go there, but COVID happened and I never did. But I've also been on this journey of like reading like African books, Zambian books, visiting other African countries. And I don't even know. I think when you talk to a lot of other people, people say it's hard because of the visas that you need to go from here to there. So you find that we've never really done it, but things are changing. You're finding that more and more people are beginning to appreciate, to say, hey, it doesn't have to always be Paris or everywhere else, you know, that people talk about going to London or whatever.
Yeah.
You can do Africa too. So I can boast of just a few countries.
No, but it's such an important point you're making. And honestly, for the future, right, even thinking about your boy and things like that, is, look, we need to start looking at Africa's potential, right? It's such an untapped market from many, many respects and many areas, right? The knowledge, I would tell you, one of the best schools that I ever got to go to, right? And I'm comparing that even with the education I got over here. But was Sacred Heart College, right? I went to Sacred Heart College in Cameroon, and it's a boarding school. It was very robust, but the knowledge that I soaked up from there and the way they taught and the camaraderie even, right? There are bonds that still last to date. You know what I mean? So some of the values, some of the cultures, and some of those things that we learn from Africa are so solid, and we need to just start working together and building bridges, right? Again, speaking to the work that you're doing, Zenith, right? With connecting immigrants, right, on your podcast, right, and enabling them to share their stories. I really don't even understand in the first place why we fight each other in the first place. Like, you know, why an African, you know, will pick up arms or whatever to fight another African. We'll have disagreements and stuff like that, but we have to protect ourselves. We have to protect our own. We have to protect our future. And what I'm trying to do, especially in this AI boom and in this AI space, is to ensure that we are part of the conversation. Right. And that we're not left behind. We're not last to the table as usual, but that we are helping build, right, what is going to be, you know, this future technology. It's always easy for us to think about, right, us and what is happening now. But here's a statistic. Human life, right? Let me say 100 years in the future, you and I are not going to be here. That's for sure. You know, unless now some technology comes about that changes this narrative. But, you know, this flesh and bone is not going to be here. So the decisions and the things that I do are not just for me, but they are for the people who will come, you know, many generations after.
No, you're doing a lot of important work. So I found it. It's called Unlock Travel Africa. So it's by
Unlock Travel Africa. Mm-hmm.
And okay. Yes. Yeah, so I'm so excited. She's gonna come on the platform so we can talk more about that.
Right.
Yeah, I've been excited since I was like, yeah, this is good. Yeah. So we should be coming. Yeah. So I've only been to I've been to South Africa. I've been to Congo. I live in a border town, and by Congo I mean I really just crossed the border. But
wow, interesting.
Right. Cross the border, like walk. You know, we use passport, but we're just like. It's like you're still in Zambia, but still.
Right. Right.
I've been to Botswana.
Wow.
And yeah, we did a drive from Johannesburg to Zambia and stayed in Botswana like for a day.
I did take
my son to Botswana when I took him in 2023. I took him to a national park for a day because you can drive from Zambia to Botswana.
I see.
Yeah. So we went and we were on the river that divides Namibia in Botswana. It was nice. He was three. He's not going to remember, but I'll show him pictures.
Look, the experience is what matters, right? That feeling of being there, right, with his mom and seeing all these things that, you know, he may not remember specifically, but it shapes his trajectory for sure.
Right. So, but I would like to go to more countries, but also I'd like fellow Africans to appreciate going to other countries as well. Because everybody wants to go to Dubai, you know, and all those places are nice, not to say they're not, but it's just that they're beautiful places in Africa that you can go to. And I want to increase that portfolio as well.
Correct. Know? We will and we shall. I think the path and the journey that we're on is irreversible.
Right.
I think we will and we shall. We shall get to that point. Even just in our generation, I think a lot of conversations are changing.
Right.
From what we had from our parents, you know, and the parents before them, I think a lot of narratives and a lot of things are changing. So I can, you know, I definitely, you know, appreciate, you know, you kind of highlighting that and projecting, right, what this future should be. What a wonderful place and what a wonderful continent we will have if that is the case.
Yeah. So tell me a bit about growing up in Cameroon, like your childhood, what was family life like? You always say your mom is your hero, Shiro.
Shiro.
A sense of, and you know, actually, before you do that, outside of English and French, is there a local language from Cameroon that you can speak?
Yes.
And what is it called?
So there is pidgin, which is sort of broken English.
Uh-huh.
This is also spoken throughout Africa, right? Even in Nigeria, you know, Congo and, you know, some other places.
Right.
But then I am particularly from a tribe called Mankon.
Mankon. Right?
So there's a Mankon dialect as well.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm not fluent in the Mankon dialect as much as I wish. But I do understand and I speak a little bit of it. So there's Mankon, right? There's pidgin, there's French, you know, and English. And by the way, this is just me. My other siblings, right, speak like five languages, you know, plus because my older brothers, you know, and younger brother in Germany. My younger sister as well, who's here in the United States with me, but at some point too, she wanted to go to Germany. So she speaks German, right?
Oh,
so think of me, add those languages, then add an extra one for my siblings. My older brother even speaks Italian and some Spanish, you know, on top of that. So quite a humbling, right? To be part of this team and be part of this family is humbling sometimes.
Right.
It growing up, to answer some of the questions that you asked, growing up in Cameroon was magical, I would say. You know, I've been fortunate in many ways. I don't take, you know, my experiences for granted. Maybe in some way or the other, this is why I'm passionate about the things that I'm passionate about. And this is why I do what I do, because I realize how fortunate, right, you know, that I've been. You know, so growing up already in a small town called Edea, right, my parents, my dad is a doctor, and then my mom, you know, started her career as a hostess on a train. and worked her way up to being, you know, in management as one of the administrative control managers there. You see, part of the reason why I say she's my hero, right? You see somebody really going from the bottom, and by the time she's retiring, you know, she's done all these things. But not only has she increased in rank, she's also increased in community because she's a community builder, right? I cannot, you know, remember a time, for example, where growing up at home, there wasn't a cousin, there wasn't, you know, a nephew. There was always somebody at home that was growing up with us, the kids, at the same time, right? So we've, you know, my family has had different people just kind of come through the door, stay with us. On top of that, my mom's one of her best friends is, you know, is German, you know, and white. So you know, we went to school with their kids, for example. You know, they are about the same age as us, right? They also have three kids, and we were just with ourselves. We were just about the same age, you know. So we went to school together. There was already that variety, I guess, in my mind, right? When I think back at that experience, that's why some things were not so unusual to me, I would say, right? One of the things as an immigrant, right, you come overseas and then you're suddenly, you know, you go from a country where you're the majority, right? You're black, you're the majority, and then you come to this other country where you're in the minority. So some of those things were not as destabilizing to me just because I had grown up in an environment where black and white coexisted.
Okay.
Right. It was just this harmony and there's this families, right. Also, you know, from different backgrounds, different ethnicities even. Right. So let me not just add or say this from a race perspective, but even a culture perspective. We, right, our roots trace to the English side of Cameroon. Mm-hmm. But I was born on the French side, right? My parents migrated to the French side, right? So, you know, we have friends everywhere.
Okay.
Right. That's adding to those things that I said, I don't take my, you know, the blessings that I have for granted.
Right.
Right. So growing up in this mixed blend helped me, shaped my perspective, helped me realize this, you know, these things that other people look at and say, oh, yeah, we're different because of this and that. And, you know, I had a brother. I had brothers and sisters everywhere. Some of them looked like me. Some of them didn't look like me. But that did not matter, right? That really did not matter. It was the things that we did as kids, you know, that kind of the bond that we even saw, right? Because the other hand of this is what the parents are doing. So the parents showed us that they could live in harmony, that they could coexist. There wasn't this animosity sometimes that you hear happening, right, with different groups and, you know, different families or things like that. I'm really fortunate, you know, in that respect. It was, you know, I'm not just, you know, maybe the way I'm painting it, people will think that it's just a rosy, you know, but no, but you know, I would say it's for a child. I am grateful for my, you know, the experiences that I had, you know, the lessons that I learned. Mm-hmm. When I was in boarding school, for example, I got in very young.
Right.
I got into boarding school at the age of 10, you know, and my classmates were, you know, a year or two, sometimes even three years older than me. So the first 3 to 4 years of boarding school were tough, right, because I was the youngest. You know, the other thing I've gotten to learn over time is something called, you know, neurodiversity, which is the way your brain works, right? And you know, me thinking differently and thinking that, you know, hey, maybe because I'm not learning as everybody's learning, then there's something wrong with me. Instead of realizing that, look, I just learn differently. And how differently I learn is that I don't like being caged, right, in a box. And I felt that the educational system was just like a box. It's like, you just had to stay within this space. And then my brain is always asking these questions like, okay, you're telling me that, you know, in chemistry, like this is a covalent bond, but like, why? You know, this is a covalent bond. And not having, you know, people who could provide that answer or even want to listen in the first place, because sometimes you ask questions and people just hush you down, shut you down, you know, something like that. So I struggled. I struggled during those first 4 years, 3 to 4 years of boarding school. And this is, again, where my mother comes in, is she gave me a book called The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale, right? And that book changed my life. It changed my life because it simply gave me perspective, right? Mm-hmm. The perspective that it gave to me was I used to be so hard on myself,
okay,
right? I used to talk to myself negatively. I used to have all these judgments and, you know, all these things that were clouding, right, and holding me back. I had all these expectations. I used to think that the problems and the things that I was going through in life were just unique to me. Okay. So what this book helped me realize at a very young age, right, is that that's not true, number one. Number two, there are so many human beings out there in the world with different stories. And especially when you think that your case is like the worst, you can find out that there's literally other people who, again, this it's not a comparison right. type thing, but look, there's some people who have, you know, their chances, the things that have happened to them in life is just so unbelievable. And if they can pull through, right, then what more of you? And it all started with that mindset. It all starts within. Right. Everything is kind of it's based off of this. So that book helped me change my mind, helped me look at the world differently, helped me understand that in part also it was my projection. Right. If I wanted to see the world be a better place, that means the responsibility was on me to make it so. Right. And not just looking at other people and saying, yeah, they're going to fix it or they're going to do the right thing. It's like, no, it literally starts with you. So after I started reading that book, first of all, when she gave me the book, in my head already, I'm thinking, hey, woman, like, don't you see that I'm struggling in school? Like, what is this? You're adding to the books and I've not even been able to grasp this once. And now you're piling up. But the moment I started reading that book, it just clicked. And here's what's funny. Mm-hmm. Some other people will read the book and they're not going to have the same effect, mm-hmm. right? Because I shared this book with just about all my classmates. Because they noticed the change. They noticed the change in me. And they were like, what is happening? It's like, you know, this glow, you were positive. Like you were just all these things. And I said, read this book. They will read it. It would not have the same effect on them. Right. So again, it's a mindset. Mm-hmm. So that semester after I read this book, right, I went from, you know, let me say in the class of about 120 uh-huh. or something like that, I went from being in those back ends, like 80-something, like 80-something, uh-huh. I'm talking, you know, and they used to grade us and rank us. Of they course. Did. Based on your results.
They would rate the grades you outside.
Yes, yes. So I left from there to like 60. And then after that, there was just this gradual decline.
Wow.
By the time I left the school, I was like number six.
Wow.
You know, so, and the thing that changed, like I said, is my mindset, my perspective. I understood that, look, as long as I was genuinely putting my best foot forward, it gave me a sense of peace. It gave me a sense of calm. I used to not do well in exams, not because I was not smart. I was nervous, right? I was going into those exams panicking. And so my mind was just scattered. It was all over the place. So those techniques and those things that I learned from the book helped ground me, keep me grounded, you know, and just, again, motivated me even to, you know, run for being a dormitory captain. Right. Why would a 14-year-old, you know?
I know.
Want to do that. But again, I developed that spirit of, look, I got to take care of the community. I developed that sense of the change that I want to see out there. I have to be, you know, kind of responsible for making it happen in my own small way. And it's not always about you being the one to do it, right? But even if you can inspire someone else, you know, to again, fix whatever is broken, right? Be positive, right? Because you have that, you know, your mind can either go to doom and gloom and worst case scenario. And most of the times you find people just will spin and spin and spin. But if you think positively, right, Again, this is not to say now tune off everything and just think positively. No, look at the reality, but know that your mindset is a very critical element to you know, your development, to your growth, to the impact that you have, you know, in your community.
Very nice. You see, mother knows best. She knew what she was doing.
You know, that you nailed that.
She knew what was doing. So, but that's very powerful to hear. And for anybody listening out there that, you know, you can always turn things around. I know for some people, it does come much later. Yeah, because you'd be there sitting thinking, oh, you know, why aren't I doing well in school? Oh, I used to be smart in grade 3. Well, what happened to me now? And yeah, sometimes you can turn things around like that. So that's very powerful, insightful. So when did the idea of coming to America come to you? How did you come to the United States, and what visa was it?
So I came to the United States as an F1 student.
Okay.
And I'll be very transparent. You know, I was in that position where, you know, I could, because my mom's best friend is, you know, one of her best friends is German. So there was that German influence on us where it's like, you know, hey, I could come to the United States, or I could, you know, study German and go to Germany. I am not a fan of a variety of languages. First of all, you know, the French and English I'm speaking is not by choice. It's just circumstance. It's circumstantial. You know, it's my environment. I grew up that way. Not to say I'm not a fan of that. I am, right? But it requires dedication. It requires all these things. You know, so I decided and I said, well, you know, Germany wasn't really where I wanted to be. And so I had a late, he's now deceased, uncle. Well, we call him uncle, but, you know, it's in Africa, everybody, you know, family, friends and things like that fall under that category. So he was here in Texas, and, you know, he found this school, Richland College, you know, and, you know, we were able to put an application together. You know, we had to prove, you know, financially, right, that we could, you know, pay for the school, you know, and then lo and behold, one thing led to the next. And I was on a plane with about, you know, if I'm remembering here correctly, because this was about 14 or 15 years ago, you know, coming here at 19 with, you know, about $300-$400, you know, and fortunately, again, I was coming and my uncle who had found the school, that was kind of a nest, right? Realizing again some of those blessings. Now, not everybody who comes as an international student has that, you know, opportunity. But I came here and I had some sort of nest where, you know, I had a roof over my head, you know, and you know, a bedroom. But at the same time, I was in a new environment. I was in a new environment and motivated to build something, you know, for myself, for my family, for my friends, you know. So some of the challenges that when you come to this country as an immigrant, you face is also about connection, right? You know, we want to, and we tend to cluster, which is, you know, it's not a bad thing, right? Where you would only want to interact with, for example, people who are from Zambia, or you only want to interact with people who are from, you know, Cameroon or Nigeria, you know, something like that. You should, you know, you should keep your community close, but at the same time, you should step out of that community, because that's where you start finding out different things. This is how you start gaining, you know, different perspectives. And then touching back to what I told you about how I grew up, right, in this mixed and varied household. So for me, that was not really a challenge, right? Making friends with people who did not really look like me. The other thing that, you know, immigrants will also struggle with sometimes is the language barrier, right? One of the things, again, that I count as a blessing is the fact that in Cameroon, we speak English and French. So making some of those changes, coming here and only speaking English. Now, I struggled, obviously, to understand some of the accents, right? Because American accent is different from, you know, African accent is different from, you know, English, from England accent, you know. So there was a little bit of that challenge, you know, in understanding, you know, how people were pronouncing certain things. But movies, right? Let me show you how tech also kind of works in this space, which maybe people don't realize is movies are a very helpful tool for you to learn a language, for you to grasp, right, how it's being used and applied, right, and things like that. I remember seeing this very short video of a kid, you know, in Mexico, and, you know, he's with the mom and they're crossing over, you know, the border, they're, you know, through Border Patrol, you know, and you know, the Border Patrol agent pulls them over, you know, and is questioning them. And the mom cannot speak English, right? And she did not know that this child who had been watching TV was picking up the language, right? So is that kind of situation where her child just, you know, starts speaking in English to this officer, explains everything to him, and, you know, they're just on their way, and the mom is looking at him like, what just happened? You know? So again, having some of that exposure, watching movies, not just for the sake of movies, but immersing myself in that culture, in that language, helped bridge, you know, some of those things. So I went to Richland College. Soon after I joined, one of the things that, you know, people started kind of recommending and noticing was my ability to simplify complex subjects, mm-hmm. right? So whether it was in economics, mm-hmm. you know, it was in mathematics, you know, people started gravitating to me to say, hey, look, maybe we attended this class and I'm not really sure what that professor was talking about. Can you explain it, right, in a different way or different manner? You know, so I started doing that, which is also unusual from the immigrant perspective because, you know, first of all, it's so hard to find a job, right, as an F1 student. You cannot work outside of campus, right? So you're limited to only the jobs on campus. And even those jobs are hard to come by because you're competing with so many other people, everyone. Right, for those jobs, uh-huh. right? So counting, again, these are the blessings I'm talking about. The fact that I, just the way I interacted, the way I communicated, resonated with people enough to start turning to me to ask me for, you know, those tutoring and things like that. I started being a tutor without pay. Nobody was paying me for this, right? Wow. But my classmates will insist and rally, right, with me after class and just say, hey, can you help break down the subject? I did that in my economics class, you know, a couple of times. And then the professor, right, David Chiro, I'll never forget his name because, you know, it was through him that I got my first job, right? So, you know, he's an economics professor, you know, he kind of sees his students going towards me and asking me all these questions. So he called me into his office. And maybe this is where you can say the immigrant experience is like, imagine the professor out of the blue just asks you and say, come to my office. You know, that's in our context. In our context, that's not a good thing.
No,
that's not a good thing. Where we're coming from,
yeah.
If a professor tells you come to my office, that's not a good thing. So that means you're in trouble. Uh-huh. So again, this is me. I'm going through my mind. I'm like, but what did I do? Yeah. What did I do? You know, what is happening and things like that. And a couple of times that he told me I didn't go. But finally, again, I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to go and find out what this professor, you know, is wanting to talk to me, you know, about. And then as I went there, you know, we started interacting and he said, hey, look, I see that, you know, students are coming to you. Do you want to tutor? Wow. Right. And this is a paid job. And I'm sitting there like, you're asking me if I want to tutor. I mean, of course. So just like that, I got my first job at the Learning Center, and I was tutoring economics, but, you know, I was hired to tutor economics, but over time, you know, people will come to me for math, you know, even French, you know, I used to tutor French and things like that. Yes.
You even tutored for really, SAT, right? Like prepared students for SAT and the PSAT. Did you do that?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. So this is after I left Richland College,
okay.
And, you know, I'm working at, you know, this company called WTW. Which, you know, they do pension, they do a variety of things, right? Right? They're an insurance agent. It's a company that hires actuaries.
Okay.
You know, so I'm working there, and while I'm working there as well, I'm helping people and tutoring people, not the people there, because right. the SAT and things like that are for high school students, but I get myself a part-time job, that tutors, that helps people, students study for those examinations. And again, you see the trend where people started just wanting to, you know, work with me, you know, things like that. It's something I enjoy. It's something that, you know, it just comes to me naturally, the ability to look at something complex and just, you know, simplify or break it. And the reason why is because I know what it's like not to understand that thing.
I know, right? Because so, before your transformation, yes. you know, you were frustrated. Exactly. And then until you read the book and you did the work on yourself and you transformed. So, and maybe, you know, that was the reason, because that helped you understand people, right? As you were in college, you understood, you were really in their shoes.
Because you were there before. No, correct.
So you could be patient and do all that, even though you were not getting paid in the beginning. So that's really wonderful. And something you also just highlighted as an international student, I think you're the second person. There's so much of what we can't do, but leveraging what we can do, right? So, for example, you had my last episode, I was just sharing about why you should have a roommate if you're an international student, or at least try to rent a room. Don't try and find an apartment. It's not worth it if you're paying so much money. But, you know, you were blessed. Yeah. You came, you stayed with your uncle, and you recognized that as a blessing. You didn't right away try to go find an apartment somewhere to stay by yourself.
Nope.
Because people will tell you, oh, no, your privacy. I'm like, yeah, you're paying so
much.
Rent a room. That's what you need to be doing.
That's solid advice, really. Yeah. I think, you know, these things that you're saying, yeah, rent a room somewhere, try to share cost.
Yes.
Right? That's how you can survive. Mm-hmm. Yes. Especially at the beginning where,
yes.
you know, you don't need those big expenses.
Correct. Don't come here straight. You're paying international and then you're paying for a whole apartment. I'm like, what are you doing? Yeah.
And the international tuition, mm-hmm. as you just mentioned, is 4 or 5 times what everybody yes. else is paying. So it's yes. not cheap.
It's a lot.
So very valid point.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of money. But, you know, you stayed with your uncle and you leveraged that. So that was very helpful. So I always tell people, if you come somewhere, yeah, just pay for that room and just stay there, ride it out until, you know, the future, 2-3 exactly. years, whenever things or the situation can change. Okay.
You can stand on your feet. Right. Yeah. Until you can stand on your feet and find something viable that is going to help you sustain.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No, but there's no pressure. And this is the other thing that I love about the African culture, mm-hmm. right? In America, there's usually that, hey, you're, is it, I don't know, 18 or something like that. You're out.
Right.
You're
right.
You're on your own. Look, we are family. Mm-hmm. We are family. That pressure, right, for Africans, it's not there
mm-hmm.
as much, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one of the strengths that we have that I hope we continue to hone is that, look, we can support each other. It you know, we can be there and make a difference, right? Without it really being that, again, this is mine, this is my space.
Yes.
You know, I need that space. When somebody makes that argument and tell you that, hey, I'm going to go pay $3,000-$4,000 somewhere just because I need my space, then, you know, I'm not saying your space is not important,
right?
But you have to weigh the pros and
correct.
Cons.
Correct. You have to. I mean, with my roommates, we had a one-bedroom apartment, but we had like a den. So it was like a one-bedroom, then there was also like a den, and we managed. So we used the den, the living room, and the room. Yeah. But when I look back, I see just how helpful that was. We were all international students going to the same school. I think one of us was going to a university. And we were paying so much money at the school that it made sense to split that rent. I can't tell you how much that helped, you know? So it's
well,
you need your space.
To you guys.
Not now. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Kudos to you guys.
Yeah. You get that space later. Cause I really, really hear people. It pains me when people are complaining and they're struggling money and they're staying by themselves. And then there's so many people we know with this market. There's so many people with houses who rent rooms. They are many.
Right.
They are countless. So again,
right,
we'll start winding down. because time is leaving us and we'll have a little bit of fun.
I don't know where the time went, Zenith. I don't know where the time
I know. And I'm like, oh my God, we could go on so many tangents, so many. But anyway, what was the last movie that you watched from Cameroon on Netflix? Because that's what we have access to here in America.
So a Cameroonian movie or just the last movie I watched?
Cameroonian. Cameroonian.
that's a dicey one there. Unfortunately, I'm not even, and I'll be open. Okay. I'll be open with this. I'm not sure which Cameroonian movie, you know, as I'm saying that, right? This is me very on, you know, live. Let me go on Netflix and say, let me go on the internet. Let me, because I want to find out. What I'm going to say is I'm curious because I don't know
which Cameroonian movie. I can tell you one or two.
Okay, please do tell me.
I watched one. I think it was called The Fisherman's Diary.
Yes, right? yes. Thank you. By the way, thank you for bringing that one up. Your question threw me off because you said, what was the last? Look, I was The Fisherman's Diaries back then, right? It was out since, let me see how many years ago The Fisherman's Diary was out in 2020.
Yes.
So I don't remember that, but I watched The Fisherman's. I love The Fisherman's Diary because, by the way, let me tell you, there was one character in it that I was like, I could relate to. Okay. You would never guess who it was. It was not the main character. It's not the main character, not that girl. She had a friend. You remember the friend who, you know, went to you know, who was still going to school while she couldn't go to school.
Uh-huh.
And then there was one particular line where that, you know, she meets her and then she asks this her friend, since she's still going to school, that how was school? You know, how did school go? Because she couldn't go, right? Uh-huh. So she was trying to find out. And her friend said, whether that teacher was saying, but that what to her head was not even there. I was like, that's me. So that's the scene from the movie that I was like, her friend said, whether the teacher was saying what, she didn't even like, her head wasn't there.
And, you know, I have to rewatch it. It's been a while because, you know, I was trying to look up the movies myself. I'm like, because the only one I could remember before today was Adu. And I wasn't sure if Adu was Cameroonian, but I know that part of it was based in Cameroon. I don't know if you ever watched that.
No, I did not. Okay. Like you see, I was struggling to even remember which Cameroonian movies, but yeah, Fisherman's Diary. Yeah.
I watched Adu some years ago. You can look it up since you're in front, you know, like in front of the
computer.
It's ADU and it was about a story about a young boy, but it was about going to the north and then crossing, you know, and going into Europe. But I think it started out in Cameroon. But so I wasn't sure, I was like, is it Cameroonian or is it another country?
So so it's not Africa. So here's what I'm saying. So near a Spanish town in North Africa, a child takes a painful journey. A father reconnects with his daughter and a coast guard is still guilt-stricken. So it does not seem like it is Cameroon.
Okay, but there's a part where they're in Cameroon. So maybe that's just part of the movie and it's not like the whole movie. Yeah, there's the part where the kid actually starts out in Cameroon. Yeah, some village.
I see.
And then they make it to another country and then they end up in some northern country. And then, they're trying to cross over to going to eat. It's actually a sad story. It is.
I will have to check it out. Yeah.
Yeah, you should check it out. Then The Fisherman's Diary. And I think that is all I knew. There were a couple. I was like, are these Cameroonian? And I just didn't realize. I mean, I just thought they were Nigerian or something.
So when I looked up online again, trying to educate myself, right, I found this also another one called Nganu, apparently, which is I'm from the title, I'm thinking it's after that too. So we have the fighter, right? There's a UFC fighter, a very popular guy called Francis Ngannou.
Okay.
So I'm just looking at that title. Maybe it's based on that or something like that because that's his name, right? So
Yeah, no, but The Fisherman's Diary, that's a good one. So I'm going to, since I have you this week, I'm like, I'm going to have to go back and watch that tomorrow.
Yes.
I'd love to do it before the show, but that's okay. And books, we already talked about it. You and I mentioned it already. So I was going to ask you what was the last book written by a Cameroonian that you read?
Cameroonian book that I read then, I'm not sure.
All right.
I'm not sure. It'll be probably, again, in college or something, reading one of those books. I don't remember the titles, though, unfortunately.
Then you should definitely check out Imbolo Mbue, her books. I've read two of her books. This one and one called How Beautiful We Were. I love that one because that one is actually based in Africa. You see how this one is based in New York? The other book is actually based in Africa. She doesn't say, but it's just like a village. But it's the way it's written. Oh, my God. It is so good as well. Yeah.
It's like how she's describing her experiences, going from one place to the other, like the challenges and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So the one in Cameroon is about a mine, I guess an oil company coming to the village and how it affects the villages and how they get displaced. It's interesting. It reminded me of another Netflix movie I watched from Kenya, but I've forgotten the title. It was something Queen South, but it had a similar take. It was also about an oil company coming to Kenya and trying to take over the village, and the villagers not trying to give up their land and stuff like that. And it just made me wonder, because I grew up in a mining town on the Copper Belt.
Right.
I wondered, were there people who lived there before the mines were started? Yes. Were people displaced? What did that look like? Do people have diseases today that may have been the effect of that? So interesting stuff. Okay.
Yeah, there's to what you just said, to add to it, right? Uh-huh. How the displacement, right, that happens, the kind of influence, even I would say, on our cultures and things like that,
right?
They've been not all those stories, unfortunately, get told even.
Right.
So we may hear some of them, but those are just the tips of the iceberg. I'm sure a lot of if we really just want to put the mic right or just kind of open the gate for some of these stories to be told. Hopefully, again, as you're kind of growing with your show, that some of those experiences, right, are highlighted, I'm sure we'll just be mind blown. This is again where I was saying the things I learned from that book was just the variety of humans, the variety of experiences that are. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we always think that, our experience should be the experience of other people, but that's not true. That's not the reality, right?
Yeah.
The choice of birth was the most random thing that ever happened. We did not choose to be born.
Right.
At some point, the light just flicked and you were alive. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that you were born in Africa. Some other people were born in Brazil. Some other people were born in all over the world. So everybody has kind of the people right now, even as we're talking, right, who are in war, like deep in war. You see what I'm saying? Yes. So that perspective, is kind of what I gained and gleaned from this book. So it fundamentally matters. What is a small contribution that you can make, right, in the world, kind of towards that end?
Please be sure to share that book so that I can add it in the show notes. But I also want to add it to my queue, my very long queue.
Absolutely. Long queue.
So now we'd love to eat Cameroonian food. So tell me the next time I find a house Cameroonian restaurant or even a Cameroonian restaurant, what food should I order? What food do you
I am very biased, so I'm going to recommend Atu because that is the food from my tribe. So Atu is it's a mix of, you have a soup, a yellow soup, and then you have pounded cocoa that has been pounded, and you can, if this online research and things that, we're doing, you can look it up and kind of see what Atu kind of looks like. And it's just delicious. It's one of the things, you can add your protein in it. So different kinds of meats, and things like that. It is so delicious. It's so good. Some other meals that, again, Cameroon being a coastal town. So we have a beach, there's a lot of seafood, some of the bass or maquereau, And the way it's spiced, right, is what brings that uniqueness, kind of to it. So if you go to an African restaurant, if it's a Cameroonian restaurant, be on the lookout for things like, you know, achu, be on the lookout for something like ndole even, which is like some spinach, you know, and you can also add your protein. You can eat that with ripe plantains. Mm-hmm. You can eat that with, you know, either fried or boiled, you know, what have you. But the food, you cannot go wrong. You cannot go wrong with Cameroonian food.
Let me tell you a short story. So we used to have friends that used to live in Laurel. I think there's a big Cameroonian community there. And people will have, like, it's a house and the basement is a restaurant and they would cook. And, oh, my God, the food would be so good. Like, it would be like bitter leaf cooked in something.
Yes.
Arrow. The beans, the beans with the black dots. I don't know what they were cooked in, but it used to taste so good, like it was cooked with some smoked something. But let me tell you, when I was pregnant, I was looking for that food. I was like, where are those restaurants? I need to find those houses.
Yes, and get some of those, you know, that African experience.
I was looking, and thought, oh yeah, go to this house.
Tell me then if the roles were reversed. Tell me, I'm going to Zambia. Tell me about, you know, what should I be on the lookout for?
So when you go to Zambia, the best things to experience is going to like a Matebeto place. And what Matebeto really means is, well, it's a traditional ceremony, but in terms of restaurant, what it means is you will have nshima, which is like fufu. It's made out of cornmeal, but you will also have a variety of foods to eat it with. So you will have like the traditionally cooked vegetables and the variety of them. So it will be like sweet potato leaves, pumpkin leaves, maybe collard greens. But which month are you going?
Next month, as a matter of fact.
If it was rainy season, like December, January, you'd find like even mushrooms. You'd love it. And then they always have all the meats. And by all the meats, I mean like grilled fish, you know, beef or pork chicken or duck, whatever, you know, has your flavor. So the beauty of the Matebeto is sort of like, if you're vegetarian, you can still eat. If you don't do pork, you can just pick something else. So I'll text it to you. It's called Matebeto and they have a variety. Please. They have different ones, especially in Lusaka. They have one. I know the popular one is called Impotoyatu.
Okay.
And Impotoyatu really just means like our pot.
Okay. Uh-huh. I was going to say Impotoyatu, you know.
It's nice. It's beautiful. And you will find all those foods and you get to taste and you'll be like, you get to know what you like out of the variety. It's not like,
look, I may just be texting you like, Zenith, food here.
You should. And you know, but for me, because some potato is kind of like, so it is a restaurant, but a Matebeto restaurant. You know, I also like the ones in the market. Yeah? And by market, I mean like local.
I see. Okay. Context. I got it.
Going in the streets because they have the best meats, you know, like.
The authentic, yes.
Because you know, in the restaurant, it's like polished and.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, okay, it's nice, but it's like, you know?
It's not the real one. And it's the same thing in Cameroon as well. Yeah. Some of those street vendors like that, I think the grills have years of experience. So the food tastes different. Yeah. Yes.
And you know what? It's so funny. So there are these things we eat. They're kind of like grasshoppers, but they're not grasshoppers. I just discovered that you guys eat them in Cameroon too.
Yes. We call ours mungwing.
What do you call them?
Mungwin.
Mungwin. We call them Inshonkonono.
Interesting.
Yeah,
Interesting.
I had a lady from Cameroon one day at work eating. I'm like, wait a minute. Where did you get Inshonkonono from? She was like, yeah, we eat them in Cameroon. I'm like, oh my God, we eat them in Zambia too. Yeah,
we're all connected.
The water and then you fry them. Yeah.
Exactly. We are all connected. We are all connected like this. No, seriously, because if you want to wind back the hands of time, they are probably just two brothers or something that just decided, you're going to stay here, I'm going to stay there, you know. And then over time, we just started drifting, but we are all the same people.
We are. Yes. All right. Yep. So tell the people, where can we find you? Tell us your social media handles and all that good stuff.
Yes. So again, with my unusual name, you can't miss. Mm-hmm. If you even just go and type Ben Collins or Songwe on any Google search, you will find a lot of resources. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Ben Collins or Songwe. You can find me on YouTube. I have a personal channel. I also have a business channel, Ben Collins or Songwe. So my business YouTube is called BC Advantage Insights. And as the company is growing and things like that, I'm, going to be sharing a lot of insights about AI and technology, and even video games. Because the other thing is, people don't realize that what is happening now in real life has been happening in video games for the longest time, right? And not a lot of people have dabbled in that space. But, as someone who has seen both sides, of the aisle, a lot of the things that are happening now have been happening in video games for the longest time. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be sharing a lot of insights, right? Sometimes how AI crosses ethics, how AI crosses philosophy. There are even things that people don't think about, mm-hmm. right? But all those things are important to us, the changes that are happening and the things that are occurring right now. So that channel is going to be there to kind of educate. And then my personal YouTube is called Mind and Heart Conversations with BC, which is really just about connecting with people from a human to human perspective, sharing their experiences, sharing their stories, a lot like what you're doing here, and just with a variety of people. But with everything that I have going on, that personal channel has just been on pause. There's some episodes out there, with my family and things like that, so people can still enjoy them. And then again, LinkedIn, you can find me there, just Ben Collins or Songwe. The company's website is bcadvantagellcs.com.
And I was
so that's another way people can get in touch with our services. Go there, go to the website, look at what we do, check out our services. And, if you're kind of interested, just fill out the form and reach out.
Sounds good. We'll share all that in the show notes. This has been wonderful. This has been such an honor. You have no idea. So I thank you very much. And how do I say thank you in the local language?
Mia.
Mia.
Mia. Yes.
Mia.
So Mia is thank you in Manco.
Okay.
Mia.
Mia. Oh, yes. Mia. And what? Thank you very much.
Mia, Titong, like you can say Mia, like just add a little emphasis there. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mia.
It adds that Mia, 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 Te. You have people say Mia, Te, like go add a little title to it. Just something to just kind of, sweeten the deal.
Okay.
But no, thank you too, Zenith, again, for what you do. For giving me this opportunity to share my story with your listeners, hoping again that this perspective can help, somebody out there, can give that motivation, right? That you're essentially the architect of your future. You're the architect of your story. That no matter what situation you're in, no matter how dire it sounds, right? Just every day, take one thing, one step at a time. And your mindset in this one step at a time is very, very important, right? Mm-hmm. If you take enough of those little steps, you will get there eventually. That is just the fact. So just keep taking those steps, little steps every day, right? Taking those little steps every day makes you cross path with people that you may not even know will play important roles in your life, right? So just one step at a time. One step at a time, and best wishes and best of luck. But again, thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, this was fun. Thank you. So to all the listeners, don't forget to rate and review. like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts from. And until the next episode, it is goodbye.